In this week's parasha, Kiseitze, Torah says, "Chiyah be'ish chet mishpat maves v'huma b'saliso so alait." If someone has a capital offense, a capital crime, and he's executed, you hang him on a tree. And then the Torah says, even though you hang him, it says, "Lo solin nivlaso al ha'etz." You shouldn't allow him to remain hanging on the tree overnight. Ki kavar tikmarenu bayomahu. You shall bury him the same day, hang him briefly a few hours, but then take him down and bury him. Why? Ki kilolas elokim toli. That is a very difficult phrase to translate. Kilolas usually means klala, curse, disgrace, bizayon, elokim, God, toli, someone who's hanging. Difficult to know exactly what this phrase means. But anyway, the pasuk is telling us, and Rishonim have different explanations, Rashi and Ramban, but you shouldn't leave him hanging, because it's somehow a disgrace for someone, for God, for people, to leave them hanging. You shouldn't defile, cause the land to be impure by doing this. So they're, according to the way Chazal, Torah Shebal Peh, understand these psukim, there are actually two important mitzvahs that emerge from these two psukim. One is, three mitzvahs even, depending how you count. One is the mitzvah of kvura, the mitzvah of burial. The Torah says, "Kavar tikbarenu, you shall bury him. Lo talin nevlaso, you shouldn't let him remain unburied. You shouldn't let the body stay above ground longer than necessary." So that is the mitzvah of kvura. The other idea, which is learned from the pasuk, or at least alluded to by the pasuk, is bizayon hames. The idea that in general, beyond kvura, before you do kvura, the way you do kvura, you have to be respectful to a corpse, to a dead person. Kilas elokim toli. These are two very important mitzvahs that are central to the Jewish attitude toward the dead. We, of course, do kvura. Jews have been doing burial for thousands of years. We have historical records of this. We have archaeology shows us that the way bodies were disposed of back in ancient Israel was through burial. Now, it's not something you take for granted. Today, for example, cremation is very popular. In some countries, in Japan, I think I saw it's 99% of people are cremated. In many European countries, even in America, the rate is relatively low, I think, but even here, it's in the double digits. In some countries, it's beyond 50%. And back in ancient times, too, cremation was very popular. Among the ancient Romans, the pagans, the ancient Romans, the ancient Germanic tribes, the barbarians, cremation was very popular. There's a quote from we know this again from archaeological records, from contemporary historians, Greek and Roman historians. The ancient Roman historian Tacitus, I did not see this firsthand, I saw this quoted, but he actually apparently 2,000 years ago refers to the fact that Jews, this is an area where Jews were distinct from the Romans. The Romans would burn their dead and the Jews would bury them. Now, I saw this quote mostly on Jewish sites. If you Google Tacitus and cremation, mostly what you get is Jewish sites pointing this out. But even non-sectarian sites, even general history works, do mention Tacitus and other Roman historians as evidence that cremation was the normal mode of body disposal for the Romans. Tacitus, the way he's quoted, at least by the Jewish sites, actually felt this was he has apparently an anti-Semitic attack on Judaism, where he says that the Jews are barbarians, they don't do things the right way, they don't do things like we Romans do. One of the examples he gave was they don't burn their dead like us, they bury their dead, which he somehow felt was self-evidently the inferior thing to do. But in any event, there is considerable evidence, both certainly from Amisara, but even from the secular sources, from the archaeological record, that cremation was very common among the ancient Romans, and we are commanded to bury our dead. And this, of course, has been the custom for thousands of years. It's still the custom today. Remarkably, if you look around, we have non-Orthodox movements that don't do a lot of what we do. They don't keep Shabbos, certainly the Reform. They don't keep kosher, many of them. Jewish burial is one thing which is still, at least according to the brief check I made last night, they still very, very much defend burial as opposed to cremation. Even the Reform movement, they're not gonna yell at you and call you a Russia if you don't do it. Even the Reform movement, they're, at least according to what I saw, their official position is to encourage burial. The cremation is one thing. Burial versus cremation is one area where the Jewish tradition has strongly encouraged burial and strongly discouraged cremation. But as I did the research on this, as I looked around more into the halachic aspect of cremation, I was kind of a little surprised to find out that remarkably there is very little discussion of the halachic question of is cremation permissible, is it allowed, how do we look at it. There's very little discussion before about a century and a half ago. The burial is taken for granted. You look in Shulchan Aruch, you look in Gemaras, they always talk about burial. It seems to have been taken for granted that the standard way to honor, to take care of the dead was burial. But we don't find any actual discussion of is cremation permitted? If it's bad, how bad is it? What do you do with someone after they've been cremated? Can the ashes be buried in a Jewish cemetery? This discussion explodes about 150 years ago. Before that, there's virtually nothing. And again, it's remarkable that the vehemence, certainly the Orthodox tradition, our tradition, but you know, the vehemence with which Judaism opposed cremation is extreme. The poskim were outraged, were furious that anybody could consider cremation. It began to become popular with the Reform movement, with the modernization of Europe. But the poskim were angry and furious and completely did not tolerate it. Yet, as I said, there's very little discussion. If you look in Shulchan Aruch or the Gemara, the early Achronim, there's very little discussion of it. So the first part of this share today, I want to discuss what the poskim did say about cremation. They all agree that everyone agrees that it's usur. They almost all agree that it's a terrible thing. There's extensive discussion about whether the ashes can be buried in a Jewish cemetery at all. Many, perhaps most poskim said no. But again, in terms of actual sources, they are very few, and it's one of these things, kind of like mechitza is another example. In the mid-20th century, mechitza and shul became a flashpoint of controversy. Some shuls that were becoming more modern, less religious, took down their mechitzas. There were major battles in the U.S. about it. There was actually a famous court case where, I don't know the name of the case, it was a famous court case between the old guard and the shul that wanted to keep it orthodox and keep it with a mechitza, and some people challenged the need for a mechitza, so the Orthodox party to the lawsuit gathered depositions from rabbanim all over the U.S. to give statements, testimony to the court that mechitza is an integral part of Jewish religious service. And again, it wasn't that easy to find, because there is a Gemara that talks about mechitza, but if you look in Shulchan Aruch, if you look in the classic halachic sources, there's not much. You have to look to the Minhag and the Mesara, kind of the unwritten tradition. And cremation, I think, kind of falls into the same category. You look in Shulchan Aruch, you look in the early poskim, you won't find a very clearly articulated objection to cremation, yet, as we'll see, the poskim were absolutely adamant that it was completely un-Jewish, completely usur, and intolerable.
So what would the incentives be to cremate versus... You have controversies when there's incentives. If there are no incentives,
That's a good question. Why do people do it? So why people do it today, for example, some people do it because it's cheaper. Some people do it because some people think apparently that it's more environmentally friendly because it doesn't take up the real estate. You know, the other people argue that burial is more environmentally friendly. Cremation uses abnormally high temperatures, releases toxic gases. It's very unnatural, so to speak. I don't know. I don't know enough about it to know why the people who do it like it better. Some people like to take the ashes with them, and you know, you bury in a cemetery, people move away, it's hard to visit the grave. Some people like to have the ashes to keep and take with them. I don't really know. I don't really know the reasons for or against. But all we can do today is discuss the halacha, why the halacha doesn't like it, what the real objection is. So the halachic objections to cremation are roughly as follows. There are basically a half dozen different objections, you know, with varying degrees of compellingness. The first and most basic issue is that the poskim felt it was a violation of the mitzvah of kura. The Torah says, "Kavur tikbrenu bayom." There is a question in the Gemara whether kura is a mitzvah d'oraisa or d'rabbanan. The Gemara does have opinions that kura is a mitzvah d'rabbanan. The Rambam actually paskins that kura is a mitzvah d'oraisa. But either way, d'oraisa or d'rabbanan, it's binding either way, and poskim generally have assumed that burning the body is a violation of the mitzvah of kvura. Kvura, kufbez, sorry. Burial, yeah. So most poskim have felt that, you know, they have acknowledged, you could argue that the mitzvah of kvura is just to dispose of the body generally, but most poskim have said no. Kvura means internment, inhumation, I've seen it referred to, buried underground. It's as a specific technical requirement, and therefore burning the body does not satisfy the technical mitzvah of kvura. That's the most basic reason. Now, you know, that doesn't seem to be, again, Yahari Val Yavra doesn't seem to be the end of the world. It's a mitzvah. You know, we have a lot of mitzvahs that we do. People, unfortunately.
Wasn't there a person who someone looted one of the cities and Hashem told him not to, and he was stoned and
burned. Are you talking about Achan? Achan, yeah. In the beginning of Yeshua, there's a story of Achan. Achan was a Jew, and when the Jews conquered Yericho, they made a cheirim that the loot, the booty, should be sanctified to God. And Achan stole some, and he was caught, and he was punished, we do have certain records of people who were burned. I'm not familiar with the details of the story of Achan. Yeah, so that's a good question. I'm not ready with an answer for that offhand. But in general, at least, there might be exceptions. In general, the poskim have said that burning a body violates the mitzvah of kvura. Okay, so it's a bittul mitzvah. Obviously, you shouldn't do it. That doesn't seem to be enough of a reason to make it the most terrible thing in the world. But that, on a basic halachic level, on a technical halachic level, that's the first reason many poskim have said that a body should not be burned. The second reason, also related to the psukim we read, is the idea of nivul hames, the desecration of the dead, the respect that we're obligated to keep to the body. Anyone who's been involved in a Jewish funeral, or certainly the Chevra Kadisha, knows that we go to extraordinary lengths to be respectful to the body. Now, respect is very tricky because every culture shows respect in its own way. Respect is very hard to talk about objective standards of respect. You show respect by doing things that your culture deems respectful. Obviously, the Torah prescribes certain things that are considered respectful. But the question always is, how do we know? In the absence of a clear halakhic guideline, how do we know what's considered respectful or not? And we find some remarkable disputes among the poskim, both in the context of burial customs as well as in the broader context of what's considered respectful. I was very amused once to see a tshuva of Rabbi Yosef Masas, a great Moroccan posik of the last century. He talks about a case where there was a fight broke out of the shul somewhere in North Africa. There was a Gentile, a Christian, I think, who came to visit a shul, and in order to pay his respects to the Jewish community, he did what Christians do to show respect. He took off his hat as a sign of respect. So the Jews, the Gabbai told him, no, he says, we're Jews, and the way we show respect is by we put on a hat. We put on a hat to show respect, a yarmulke, a hat. We said, well, that's very nice, and you're Jews. He says, but I'm a Christian, and the way Christians show respect is by taking off the hat. So they had a great dispute over what's the proper way to show respect. Should I follow my culture, the visitor culture, or the host culture? So Rabbi Masas said, the visitor culture. If he's the visitor, he's the one. He should show respect based on his culture, and not... That's respect. Respect is not, you know, it's not really objectively defined. Respect is doing what you consider respectful. If that's what your culture considers respectful, that's what you should do. There's a tshuva in the Rashbash, I think, a great North African posik also from the 15th century, the son of the Tashbats, Shlomo ben Shimon Duran. So he was asked whether people are allowed to wear shoes in shul, because in Islamic cultures, in the Arab cultures, you take off your shoes when you go into even a regular person's house. Certainly in a mosque, you can't wear shoes into God's house. So he says, of course you have to take off your shoes in shul. He says, how can you possibly wear shoes in shul? He says, you go into the lowliest peasant's house, if you would wear shoes, it would be a terrible insult to him. He would say, this is outrageous, you're coming into my house with shoes. What could be more disrespectful than that? He says, you're going to come into God's house with shoes? He says, Chas v'shalom. Obviously, we don't do that, because in our culture, wearing shoes is taking off your shoes is not a sign of respect. We wear shoes. You meet a present, you wear your shoes. You don't take off your shoes. So your respect is very much a cultural thing. So the question is, how do we define kavod hames? What is considered kavod hames? What is bizayon hames? Is cremation bizayon hames?
The quote that you cited in the beginning of the Roman leader seems to be the same issue, that Jews were not showing respect for their dead when they're burying them. You should show respect by cremating them.
Right, exactly. So we'll return to that point in a minute. Yes, that's exactly the point, that if the host culture or the broader culture fails, this is how we show respect. How do we know what we consider respect? So we'll elaborate more on this in a minute. So there's a fascinating tshuva of the Rashba, which everyone quotes in these contexts of burial, cremation, autopsies. The Rashba was asked, they had a person who had died, and he had died away from the cemetery they wanted to bury him. They wanted to bury him in a family plot somewhere, and he died far away. And it was difficult to transport the body while it was in the middle of, you know, sorry, this topic requires that we get a little graphic. I'll try not to be too revolting. But the problem was the body had already started to decompose. And it was difficult to transport the body while it was in the process of decomposing. It made the most sense to wait till it totally decomposed. They had just the bones. That would be easy, much easier, much cleaner to transport, to then bring the bones to the family plot. But it would take time. To wait for natural decomposition would take time. They wanted to use basically chemicals, they call it SID or lime. They wanted to use chemical agents to hasten the body, accelerate the body's decomposition. They asked the Rashba, is that okay? Can we do that in order to accelerate the process, to be able to bring the body to its proper cemetery? The Rashba said, yes, no problem. He said, and even though in his case it was specifically for the cover of the mace, to bring him to the family burial, many poskim say it's not, that's not really material. The main point of the Rashba is that using artificial chemical agents to hasten the body's decomposition does not contradict halacha in any way. And he brings the example of embalming. We find in Bereishis about Yosef, about Yaakov. Sorry? Yaakov, exactly right. He brings this raya from Yosef and Yaakov that they embalm them. Embalming is a pretty messy process. They say you cut open the abdomen, you remove the organs, you put chemicals in. He said it's a very artificial, intrusive, unnatural process. But as long as you're doing it for the right reasons, as long as you're doing it out of respect to for the honor and respect of the mace, that's fine. So the Rashba says, using chemicals to hasten the decomposition, since you're doing it for a good reason, you're not out to disgrace the mace, you're out for the ultimate cover of the mace, that's fine, not a problem.
How does that work exactly? If you're decomposing the body, do you carry along the decomposed parts with you?
I don't know. Right. We are very careful to get every bit of tissue and flesh. When you do a tara, every piece of cloth that has some blood or some tissue on it, we take the cloth with them. But yeah, we are very machped to bury every single part of the body.
With embalming, they remove the organs.
Yeah, that's a good question. What do you do with the organs? I don't really know. I'm not really sure. I don't
know.
Yeah, so I don't know enough about it. I'm not sure what they did in the Rashba's time. He's asking when they use these chemicals, they have like where the remains left. I don't know the details, so it's a good question. I'm not sure. But there are actually those. There is a Zohar, I think they bring, who says that Yaakov was not embalmed, but in the standard way of cutting the abdomen, he was embalmed by inserting chemicals down the throat. It was done differently, but in any event, the Rashba seems to assume that it was done surgically. And the Rashba's point is that it is not considered bizayin hameis as long as you're doing it, decomposing, destroying part of the body. As long as you're doing it for the ultimate cover of the mace, is not a problem. And several hundred years later, about 500 years later, in the Machzah Shekel, the commentary on the Magen Avraham, he actually brings this as a proof that burning a body is not really a bizayon. He wasn't talking about cremation. The context was not cremation. The context was Hilchos Shabbos. There's a whole Siman in Shulchan Aruch that talks about if a conflagration breaks out on Shabbos and houses are burning. And today we put out all the fires. Today everything's a sakana. Houses are next to each other. People are inside the houses. Today we always put out fires. But in general, in the time of Chazal, it wasn't always considered a sakana. If you had isolated houses and all the people were out, it wasn't always considered a matter of life and death to put out the fire. So in many cases, you're supposed to just let the fire burn, even if there'll be property damage. You can't be Mechal Shabbos just to save your property. So the question arose, what if there is a mace? What if there's a dead body in the house? And if you let the fire burn, the body will be destroyed. Is that enough of a reason to permit putting out a fire, extinguishing a fire on Shabbos? So the Magen Avraham brings the Beis Yosef, who says, no, not enough of a reason. Why? So the sugya itself is complicated beyond the scope of our discussion, but basically the Magen Avraham uses the expression, the body burning is not a bizayon. He says that's not considered a bizayon for the mace. So many Achronim say, not a bizayon for the mace, the body burning, that sounds pretty bizayon to me. So Magen Avraham apparently held not. Magen Avraham held that a body burning is not considered a bizayon. And Machzah Shekel says the proof is from this Rashba. The Rashba says that even artificially taking caustic chemicals and putting them on the body to cause the body to disintegrate and decompose rapidly, so actively causing decomposition and destruction of the body is not a bizayon. And even over there they did it for a covered amaze, but the Machzah Shekel feels that's not the point. The point is, The Rashba's primary point is that destroying the body actively is not considered, as long as it's done respectfully, as long as it's not done in a disgraceful way at least, that's not considered bizayon hames. So Machzeh Shekel argues that deliberately, well, he's not talking about deliberately, he's talking about allowing a fire to consume a mace, but that's not really called bizayon hames, he says. That's not such a problem, and that's not considered bizayon hames. And this Rashba actually is born in Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says that you're actually allowed to use these chemicals to destroy the body, and again, the Shulchan Aruch passings like that. Now, not only that, there actually were some poskim or some individual people who had the custom of doing this, of using lime or caustic chemicals, throwing them in with the body to cause decomposition. They did it even without the reason of the Rashba, because they had to transport it just to automatically hasten the decomposition, because there are Kabbalistic sources and Midrashic sources that the soul doesn't get its final rest until the body has finished decomposing. Yes, and we'll get to that too. But so no poskim, in spite of the fact that your logic makes sense, that according to this argument, burning would be the best. It takes an hour or two, and then you're finished. But almost nobody makes that point. But at least with regard to chemical decomposition, there were actually some people who had the custom to do it because the soul gets to its final resting place more quickly. According to other sources, the soul feels pain while the body's decomposing, so by hastening it and making the process, getting it out, it's like ripping off the bandaid, getting it done quickly, is better for the...
Isn't that part of the process, the decomposition?
So that's what the Radvaz says. It's a tshuva in the Radvaz out of Egypt about 500 years ago. The Radvaz mentions that some people had this custom, and his reaction is basically your reaction. He says, I understand the logic, he says, and I'm not saying it's austere, because like we saw in the Rashba, that using chemicals is not considered bizayon hames. However, he says, he calls it hitchakmut. He says, you're trying to outsmart God. He said, God set up a process. God wanted a natural process of like you said, kapara, of a certain amount of decomposition, pain, bizayon. That's the natural way to do things, and we shouldn't try to outsmart God. He says, I'm not saying it's austere, he says, but you're asking me, I don't recommend it, because let nature take its course. The ancient custom was burial. You know, don't try to be such a chacham, and don't try to outsmart the system of Kadosh Baruch Hu designed for the world by artificially changing the process. This reminds me of a discussion I had. I had this dilemma several months ago. Spoke about it in the night call. With the advent of anesthesia, last couple hundred years, the question arises: should a bris milah be done using anesthetic? So the practice today, I think, is that for adults, bali tshuva, gerim, people who have problems with the bris milah when they grow up, anesthesia is typically used, at least topical, if not general. For children, it's rare, certainly uncommon, probably rare, for anesthetic to be used. When I made my bris several months ago on my child, I actually wanted them to use anesthetic, and I actually had them all use a topical anesthetic. It is done, and so what's the debate? What's the issue? So some poskim argued, when it comes to general anesthesia, poskim had other objections. You want it to be conscious, especially if it's the adult person, you want it to do the mitzvah, you want it to be aware of the mitzvah. The general has its own issues, but if you're using topical, the person will remain conscious, just that he won't feel pain. So, you know, we never really know how much pain a baby feels. There are some studies, but you know, I don't think we really understand the sensation of pain in infants that well. But several people did remark to me after my son's bris that he seemed unusually quiet. He might have just been a well-behaved baby. He might actually have worked anesthesia. I don't know. But in any event, he did feel... several people did tell me he seemed quieter. On the other hand, recently I was at the bris of a relative. The Mohel also used anesthesia. He assured the gathering in advance the baby would not feel pain, and if he did cry, it would just be for the exposure and the fuss. The baby was quiet while they undressed him. It was quiet for the first few minutes until they actually started using the surgical implement, and then he started to howl. So, not sure what was going on there. But you know, what's the issue with what's the issue with anesthetic? Why shouldn't you use it? So some poskim have said, similar to the argument we made about kfura, some poskim have said that the bris is a process that Kodesh Baruch Hu wants. Pain is part of the process. That's part of the hachnasah bris, and that you shouldn't tamper with the way God set up the world. I personally had a lot of trouble with that argument. Other posts can disagree. Other posts can say it's our job to improve the world. The whole idea of the bris. God gives us an arla, and God tells us to improve ourselves with a bris. And that is a famous Gemara. The Gemara said that a certain Roman or a certain Apicurus asked one of the Tanaim. He said, what's better, the work of God or the work of man? He meant to say, why are you doing a bris? God made a person this way. You know, why God told us to do the bris, obviously, but you know, why do you think you can improve on God's handiwork? So the rabbi answered, let me ask you a question. He said, you have wheat, and humans grind the wheat and pour water on it and knead it into dough and bake it in an oven, a bunch of artificial and unnatural processes. What's better, bread or wheat? Bread is better. So you see, he said that God put us in the world, he gave us opportunities, he gave us raw materials, and he gave us the chance to improve things. We have vaccines, we have modern medicine, we have all kinds of things we do to improve people. So in general, Judaism does not believe that just because something is natural, it has to be better. We believe that God gave us the chance and the right to do what we can. It's a controversial topic there. You know, when it comes, we discussed also in Night Color, we discussed plastic surgery. Most posts are willing to allow plastic surgery, even just cosmetic surgery, to make someone look better. Some posts can, minority view is, don't interfere with God's handiwork. To cure disease, yes, but if God made a person looking a certain way, I'm not sure if that applies to, let's say, a burn victim, but at least if someone just naturally wants a different nose, so there is a Sicilizer Shita that don't tamper with God's handiwork. But the normative opinion is...
But there is a difference because you have a Easter of becoming that.
Yes. So idea, of course, is correct. And when it comes to plastic surgery, there are other reasons to forbid it. Chovel Ba'atmo, there's a special prohibition against self-harm, against inflicting an injury. Some posts can worry about the danger. Every surgery carries risk. There are other reasons to forbid surgery. But the point is that this particular argument, that just because it's natural, we shouldn't tamper with it, is not a compelling argument. And one certainly could have argued that if we've developed ways to enhance the process, maybe it's not us. In any event, we find rabbis on both sides of this, whether using chemical means to accelerate the decomposition is okay or not. But you pointed out, by the same logic, we should allow cremation. This was a bridge too far. As far as I know, nobody or virtually nobody has advocated cremation. And again, the question is why. So one argument we've seen is that it violates the mitzvah of Tvura. Second argument is some posts can consider it nivul ames, although again, it's not necessarily clear that it is. Chemical decomposition is not. You could argue that cremation itself is worse. Some people have argued that it is. But again, nivul ames, it's very hard to define appropriate covenant or not. And not entirely clear that would be a sufficient reason to prohibit it. So again, we have no strong precedent for it. I want to just clarify, Chas v'Shalom, I am not coming to argue that cremation is okay. The overwhelming consensus of all poskim for the last two centuries is that it's most certainly not okay. I'm just coming to analyze the different arguments and weigh what the force of them are, but Chas v'Shalom, I am not coming to suggest that it should be mutter. There's a third argument, a very interesting argument, which I really do not understand. Many people have argued that cremation shows a disbelief or rejection of the belief in the resurrection of the dead. We believe in Tchias HaMeisim, that God eventually will bring the dead back to life. They argue that by burning the mace, you're rejecting that, you're showing that you don't believe that God will bring the dead back to life. I have a lot of trouble with this argument too, because God is all powerful. All the Jews who were burned to death in the Inquisition in Spain, burned to death in the Holocaust, of course we believe God will bring them back to life. Is it harder for God to do it? I don't think so. I mean, God can do whatever he wants. Even though it's true, we find an idea in the Mefarshim that God prefers to minimize miracles. In general, he wants to. He tries to keep the world working on the natural order. But there's no question that Hashem is HaKol Yachol and can do whatever he wants. And Tchias HaMeisim is a nace, how you look at it, whether the body is decomposed in the ground and eaten by worms or burned, it's equally as much of a nace of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do it. So you're not making it any harder for God by burning the body. So how exactly are you showing that you don't believe in Tchias HaMeisim by burning the body? I don't really understand this reason. Yet again, many poskim have vehemently, Milchas Elazar, the Munkacher Rav, Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg, and the Sri Deish, many other poskim have insisted vehemently that someone who deliberately chooses cremation is explicitly and publicly repudiating belief in Tchias HaMeisim, and that's why it's such a terrible avera, v'apikorsis. But again, I don't fully understand why that should be so. Now, we discussed earlier the questions of the customs of the non-Jews. So here again, Poskim have used the same argument in opposite directions. We mentioned that the ancient Romans, you know, perhaps looked at the Jews as being barbarians for not showing respect the way they did by burning the bodies. So some Poskim have actually argued that that's the reason to prohibit cremation, because we know there's a prohibition against following in chukas hagoyim, following in idolatrous ways. If the pagans, if the Gentiles have a certain practice, we're not supposed to deliberately copy practices of the non-Jews. Some poskim have argued that you should not cremate because that's deliberately adopting a non-Jewish practice. On the other hand, some poskim have argued in the 19th century that because modern civilized opinion, Western European civilized opinion at least, not speaking of the Chinese or of, you know, non-European cultures, but because Western cultures, the Christians, the non-Jews, the religious, civilized, quote-unquote, non-Jews of the time, believed that burial was the way to go, so it would be a chilul Hashem if we didn't bury. If they do it, if they see it as morally correct to bury, it would be seen as a chilul Hashem if we didn't do so. These are two almost opposite arguments. One argument is that if we do what they do, then we're aping the non-Jewish customs, and that's chukas hagayim. The other argument is if we don't do what they do, and they see it as a chilul Hashem because we're not doing what they think is morally correct. And in the same tshuva I've seen, literally one paragraph apart, these two opposite arguments. Because the ancient Romans did it, if we would do it, there would be chukas hagayim. Because the modern Christians don't do it, if we would do it, it would be a chilul Hashem. I really don't understand how you can have... Sorry?
That was a Roman.
Oh, really? I don't know that. Okay.
It was a Roman thing to respect, have black lines.
Uh-huh. And it somehow became a Jewish custom too. So I think there's a lot of discussion about chukas hagayim is a very difficult prohibition when it applies. You know, obviously Western dress, button down shirts and slacks and socks and lace up. You know, a lot of obviously the styles we do mostly do come from non-Jewish culture. There are a couple of tshuvas in the Abiya Omer of Ravadia Yosef. He discusses specifically funeral practices using black mourning, wearing black clothing, black hatbands, black hearse, covering the horses in black clothing, as well as putting flowers on a coffin, both of which are non-Jewish mourning customs. Ravadia Yosef has two lengthy, classically, characteristically erudite tshuvas on whether these practices are permitted for Jews, and his answer is unequivocally yes. Not everyone agrees, but he answers these are absolutely permitted. And kind of the point you made, and the point you were making before, and the point I made before too, that respect is not inherently a religious thing. Respect means doing what your culture considers respectful. So if you live in a culture that considers putting a black blanket over the horse, the horse that carries the hearse, as respectful, so that's fine. It might not be authentically a Jewish custom. Nobody's going to claim the Jews did this, but that's not the point. The point is respect is defined by what the culture considers respectful, and just as we discussed earlier with shoes, with hats, as your the example you're bringing from the Talis, if that is what the culture considers respectful, we don't have to have an authentic Jewish source for it. It's not the chukas hagayim means something which is considered idolatrous, something which is considered inherently pagan, but something which is just considered an arbitrary form of respect is not something. It's not an Isser. Rav Adya actually claims that there are Jewish sources for black too. He argues that it may actually have some Jewish roots, but even without that, Rav Adya feels that fundamentally respect is defined as doing what the culture considers respectful, and therefore, Meikra Din, he says unequivocally, there is no Isser in adopting these types of customs, even though they originate from the non-Jews.
Flowers are, according to Rav Adya, would be mutters.
Flowers on a grave, I'm pretty sure that's one of the cases he says. Now, we do actually find the halacha objection to flowers in shuls. On Shavuos, where the customs are to put flowers in shuls, then that's pretty universally accepted. There were poskim who were very, very concerned, especially with trees. The Vilna Gaon was very upset. There were poskim who felt that introducing... Sorry?
Asherah,
right. Asherah was something the Torah is very concerned about. They used to have worship of trees. I remember I used to visit the Brooklyn Museum. So they have from the Malchus Asher, from the Assyrian Empire, they have these friezes, these bas-reliefs, I guess, these plaster things with pictures of them. So you just see dozens of them, one after another. They show Assyrian monarchs or generals and fancy headdress and robes. They show them next to trees, trees that have like estrogen or some kind of fruit coming out of them, and you see these emperors or gods are kneeling down in front of the trees and doing God knows what to the trees. Basically, Asherah, one after another, they show them, you know, the captions explain these were religious tree worship. Asherah was like a big deal back in those times, and certainly the Torah has many, 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 many prohibitions of Asherah. So especially when it comes to trees, some of the poskim got nervous, and even flowers may have been some objection. I'm not sure. Flower today, obviously, at the minute, we do have flowers in the shul. And if I'm not mistaken, I have not seen these chuvas in a while, but I'm a few months already, but I believe that Rav Avadia says that flowers on a coffin, mikra din is okay. Now, he does conclude his chuvas by saying he does not recommend these things. He says, Baruch Hashem, we Jews, we have our own funeral customs, and we don't really have to go looking for non-Jewish customs, especially, he says, in Eretz Israel, where we have our own culture, and we're not as integrated with Western culture. Certainly, Lechatchila, he says, if people ask us what to do, we should recommend they stick to the authentic Jewish customs. However, he says, if people are in time of grief and mourning, they're not always reasonable, he says, especially if they're not so steeped in Jewish culture. It can be hard, he says, to give people a hard time right when the relative is dead. It's not always a good idea, he says, so use your judgment, he says. If people really want it, and they can, not worth starting a fight over. Mikra Adin, he says, I'll be Allah, it's okay. The black and the flowers, he says, so it's much. So again, the same thing over here. The fact that the non-Jews do cremation would not necessarily be enough of a reason to prohibit it, because again, if they just did it as a neutral sign of respect, if it had religious significance, that would be a big problem, because that is chuk sagayim. To adopt Gentile religious practices is very problematic. But just because that's how they show respect, it's not necessarily be a problem. But once again, the consensus of the poskim is, for some or all these reasons, is that cremation is absolutely prohibited. As a matter of fact, there is a major debate among the poskim whether the ashes of a cremated person who did it and didn't listen to us can or should be buried in a cemetery at all. It seems that the consensus of the poskim is that they should not even be buried in a Jewish cemetery. There are a number of technical issues, whether the mitzvah of kfura still applies to the ashes or not after they've been cremated, whether the ashes are asur b'hana, a mace itself, a dead body, is prohibited to benefit from it, whether the ashes are also asur b'hana, so they should be buried to be kept out of the way or not. There are a number of technical issues. It seems, from my cursory reading of the literature, the main reason the poskim were largely opposed to the burial of cremated remains is because they felt that it would give our imprimatur, it would encourage cremation. If we show we're okay with it, then we'll give you the normal rights of a Jewish deceased person, that'll show that we're okay with it. In order to show we are not okay with it, we don't tolerate it, we think it's wrong, many poskim, I think the consensus of almost all poskim is that they should not be buried in a Jewish cemetery at all. Some poskim have said that they can be buried off to the side in a separate section. But even here, the majority opinion is that certainly they should not be buried in the normal place in the cemetery, and some say they shouldn't be buried at all.
According to the opinion that after cremation, the ashes would still have the chiyuv of kvura, and if you do bury the ashes, would you be yod to the mitzvah of burying?
So the answer is yes, partially. The halacha is you're supposed to bury the entire body. If you're missing parts of the body, you bury whatever you have. And the poskim do generally say that you can't say, for example, I'll bury one limb and the rest I'll cremate. That the poskim generally say is a violation of the mitzvah. Now, you might still partially be mekayem the mitzvah, you're doing some of it, but certainly the mitzvah requires that you bury as much as possible. So I think the answer to your question would be, if you bury the remains, you get a partial kiyum mitzvah, but not all. You're mevatel part of the mitzvah, although you fulfilled part of it. So it's in between, half and half, kind of. So if that's all you have at this point, you should still do it, because you're mekayem something, according to some poskim, but so that is a very good point, and poskim do distinguish between someone who instructed his own cremation and someone who did not. Among the reasons poskim give for not burying someone who cremated himself, they argue that he did a terrible avera. Some poskim say, so what? We bury non-religious Jews, Jews who are Michal Shabbos and did other averas, we bury in cemeteries too. Even though al pi halacha, the Gemara says, maybe you shouldn't, you should bury them separately, but we don't do that very often. So some poskim say, once you're burying a Michal Shabbos there, why can't you give cremation? It's not the end of the world. It's not worse than Chil Shabbos. Other poskim say, some poskim say, in a way, it is worse, because, again, it shows disbelief in Tchias and Mesim. Some poskim say it's worse because you're specifically rejecting burial traditions. Some poskim say it's worse because Michal Shabbos, we can say, all right, throughout his life, he's Michal Shabbos. Maybe he had a temptation. Maybe he was worried about losing his parnasa. But this is just, there's no reason for this. This is just lahachis. Or this, also they say the Mechalal Shabbos may be on his deathbed. He did tshuva. He realized the error of his ways. This guy, till the last minute, he kept his instructions for cremation. Some say maybe he didn't. Maybe he was just too late to change his mind. All the way at the end, he was weak. He couldn't change the will. But so there were some poskim who said that it's not worse than any other avarian. Other poskim said because he's an avarian, because he's an avarian, because we don't want to encourage it, we shouldn't bury him there. But again, they certainly make your point that if someone was cremated against his will, certainly if he was cremated by the enemies, by the Germans, then the minhag was after the Holocaust, if they found remains, they did bury the ashes. Everyone agreed to that, I think, or almost everyone agreed. So in general, that, as I said, I think the real reason the poskim had was because we want to punish people who instructed their, who gave orders for their own cremation. We want to discourage the practice. And I think you're right. I don't remember all the sources, but I think you're right that if it was, someone was cremated against his will, I think we would be much more willing to treat him as a normal Jew since it was not his fault. I wanted to spend a few minutes now, running out of time, I wanted to spend a few minutes discussing autopsies now. So autopsies, again, similar considerations are in play. There are a number of reasons the poskim generally forbid autopsies. One reason is because if you're not going to bury the whole body, you're going to mevatel kura. Again, but you can bury the whole body also. You can avoid that. If you're careful and you don't discard any of the tissue, you just dissect it, but you still make sure to have all the tissue, that won't be such a problem for burial. The main reason seems to be nivul ames. The main reason seems to be desecration of the dead. Now again, it's not obvious necessarily that dissecting the mace has to be nivul, but many poskim assume that it is. This question was discussed by a number of poskim beginning again in the late 18th or mid 19th century. There were three main positions taken by the poskim. The Nodi Bihuda and the Chasam Sofer both said that autopsies would be nivul ames. General, an autopsy for the general purpose of advancing medical science, medical schools, would not be mutter, even though it's progress, it's for a good cause, but the general benefits that we expect to accrue from medical education are not a sufficient reason to permit nivul ames. However, if you can actually save a life by dissecting a corpse, for example, somebody's dying of Ebola or some disease which other people have too, and there are other people right now who have the same disease, and if you dissect this body, you may learn something about the disease which will enable you to treat other people, that's pikuach nefesh. Pikuach nefesh overrides all isurim in the Torah, so it would override the isur of nivul ames. They say that's only true if there are other people who are sick with the same disease right now. But just because you expect in the future the science and medical science you learn from the dissection will ultimately help you in the long run, that's not a good enough reason. There has to be somebody who's sick right now to be called pikuach nefesh. Otherwise, is an isser of nivul ames. Some poskim have argued that today, with modern communication, the whole world is one big global village, so there's always going to be somebody somewhere who could theoretically benefit from the dissection. Other poskim say that's a bridge too far. Unless you really have someone concretely who you think might benefit, like in an epidemic of some sort, then you should not dissect. Other poskim are both more machmer and more mekel. Most notably, Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger, the Binyan Tzion, has a chumrah and a kula. He has a chumrah that even for pikuach nefesh, he says, you're not allowed to do an autopsy. He has a great chiddush. He says that the reason pikuach nefesh is docha all mitzvahs in the Torah, that's really only ben adam l'makom. Hashem says, my mitzvahs, Shabbos, kashrus, I'm willing to let you go skip all mitzvahs except for the three cardinal sins. Do whatever you have to do to save a life. However, anything which is ben adam l'chavero, where you're infringing on someone else's rights, you can't do that, even to save your own life. Now, if it's just money, he says, then many poskim say it's okay because you'll pay him back afterward. If I need to break a window to escape from a fire, I'm a guest in your house. The fire is burning down the house. I want to break the window to get out. I'm there. The fire is going to burn it down anyway. But even if it wouldn't, I want to you know, steal your car to escape from a murderer. That's okay. Even if I have to smash your window to steal the car, that's fine because I'll pay you for it afterward. But covered on maize, which you can never repay, the person's dead. So he says, covered on maize is not doche, even pikuach nefesh, because b'nadim l'chaveiro, my rights are inviolable. The maize's rights are inviolable. However, he says, that same chumrah has a kula. Since the whole reason for the chumrah is because the maize has rights, it's his dignity that can't be infringed. If he himself doesn't mind, if he signed before he died, he wrote a will, he signed over his body for science, for medical research, that goes away. Because he said, Beradul Chavera means, it's my right, I can be mochel it. So the Chumra is that without his Mechila, maybe you can't do it even for Pikuach Nefesh. The Kula is that if he's okay with it, then it's not so bad. And the Tzitz Eliezer has a tshuva. Again, there are many different shitas on this topic, but the Tzitz Eliezer has a tshuva. He was asked by the chief rabbi of Israel, Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, a goon in his own right. He was asked, the Israeli government was formulating policy on autopsies, and they asked the chief rabbinate's office to give a halachic opinion. What's the halach of autopsies? Tzitz Eliezer goes through these various shitas. He brings, again, the opinion of the Yehudim Nachsam Sefer that Pikuach Nefesh is a heter, but only if there's another chola b'faneinu, only if there's another person right in front of us who stands to benefit from the autopsy. He does bring shitas, machnechayim, the shalom eshiv, that even perhaps if there is no chola b'faneinu, even the general advancements of science, which we expect to help sick people in the future, might also be a heter. There is such a shita, he says. On the other hand, he says, the Yehudim Nachsam Sefer seem to indicate that without Pikuach Nefesh, even if the person agrees and signs a permission before he dies, donating his body to science, it's still aser. Because, again, kilas alakim tolik. The Sefer says the person's body has spirituality, it has holiness. It's a mitzvah in the Torah, it's not up to you. Hashem, it's the same way you mentioned before, self-harm is aser. Even though by definition I'm agreeing to the self-harm, the Torah still says if I don't have a productive reason to do it, I can't do it. Then nivul ha-meis, even if you do have a productive reason, even if you want to do it for science, these akharim say it's still aser, even if you have permission, if it's no pikuach nefesh. You have the opinion of the Binyan Tzion, who says that it's aser, even for pikuach nefesh, but if a person says it's okay, then it's okay. But since Eliezer is inclined to be lenient in both these cases, he's inclined to, in his final opinion that he wrote back to Rav Herzog, he's inclined to be lenient both if there's actual pikuach nefesh as well as if the person himself signs that he's okay with it. There's actually another very interesting svara the post can bring. The post can talk about an autopsy for criminal forensics to help catch a murderer. If you want to cut open the body to figure out how he was killed, who killed him. Here again, we find Poskim who allow it, and here we have a very interesting reason. Again, one of the main reasons that Poskim forbid it is because the mace's dignity is inviolable, but that's his right. Some Poskim say, we assume the mace himself would have an interest in catching his murderer. He wants justice, he wants closure, even though he's dead. Poskim say that in the Jewish tradition, as well as in the general tradition and secular culture of ghosts, there is this idea that a mace himself wants his murderer caught, is happier, will rest more easily if he's caught. And in general, there's a mitzvah to promote justice, to provide deterrence against murder. So Poskim have said that we assume the mace himself would be okay with it if we're doing it for his own benefit. We find in general, digging up bodies, we do it to bring the mace to Eretz Yisrael for other reasons. There's actually a fascinating debate in the Poskim. There was a case where they buried somebody. They thought it was so-and-so, they weren't sure. The body was badly decomposed. This man's wife wanted to remarry. She was not good enough, but she had to get proof of her husband's death. And when they buried him, they hadn't had proof at that point. She said, when she finally got to the place, she said, I can give you a simon. I have a birthmark or a scar or something on the body. If you dig up the body and you see it, you'll see that these simonim are there. So the question is, are they allowed to dig up the body to permit an agunah to remarry? Permitting an agunah to remarry is a great, great mitzvah. We try very hard to find basis to do it. So some poskim said a person would certainly be willing to undergo some undignified digging up in order to do the great mitzvah of allowing her to remarry. Other poskim said no, because if we're actually convinced it's the right guy, then yes, then he's going to accomplish a great mitzvah and it's mutter. But if he's the wrong guy, then nothing is accomplished. The woman is still aser. So the question is, misafek, if he's the right guy, great, he'll do a great mitzvah. If it's the wrong guy, it won't be mutter. The poskim debate this at this point, but the general idea is that we are in general going to dig up a body or perhaps even do an autopsy or other things if it's considered something which is a mitzvah for the benefit of the mace himself, but for no reason, just for the general advancement, or I shouldn't say no reason, but for the broader question of the general advancement of medical science. Here the poskim are split. The Behudin himself were machmer, but you can see it was even more machmer unless the person agreed. So Eliezer was inclined to make him. This was actually a very controversial topic about 100 years ago. The medical schools in Europe, in Poland, and other places in Europe, the medical schools wanted every community, every ethnic group to contribute their fair share of cadavers for medical research. So they wanted the Jews to contribute some cadavers for research. And many people felt that if the Jews would not contribute anybody that would say religiously we can't do it, they would not have Shivyon Benatel, they would not be bearing their fair share of the burden. So people felt that would lead to a Chol Hashem, it would lead to discrimination against Jews. So people asked, is there any heter for the donation of Jewish cadavers to medical schools? The poskim generally felt there was not. They generally felt the consequences wouldn't be so severe. They felt it was an iser. They felt that using corpses for medical research was not enough of a heter for Nivul HaMeis. So they generally forbade it. There's a cute witticism from Rameir Shapiro. Rameir Shapiro was famous as the originator of Daf Yomi in Poland, but he was also a noted posik in his time. So he has a tshuva. He says he and other rabbanim had a great meeting about this. They were asked by the medical school types about whether they could find a heter for this, and he said absolutely not. Nivul HaMeis, Bittul HaMitzvah of Kfura. He was strongly opposed to this, and he has a very cute witticism in the end of his tshuva. We say. He says that in Mashoel Yeh Rofei Cholim, Ma'ameshiv Yeh Matir Asurim, Torah Matir Ha'aleh. We say in Shemoneh Esrei, Rofei Cholim, Matir Asurim. Matir Asurim literally means to unbind those who are tied up, who are bound, but there's an old rabbinic pun that we read Asurim like Isurim, Matir Asurim to mean to permit things that are prohibited. So he has this joke, he says, if the Shoel is a Rofei Cholim, a doctor, and the rabbinic decides it will be too lenient, it'll be a matra asurim, what's going to be with the Torah? He strongly was opposed to it, and in general, I think poskim were opposed, but again, in modern times, since Eliezer was not quite convinced that it was such an iser, he was willing to be lenient and allow the, possibly under certain circumstances, to allow the bodies to be operated on for medical research. However, one thing he says very strongly, and he quotes this from the Rameir Shapiro too, just because you're going to dissect the cadaver, it certainly in no way means it can be disrespectful. He says, so sometimes they just leave the body parts lying around, they leave them in jars, on shelves for years. Chas v'shalom, he says, do whatever research you have to do, but treat the body respectfully. And at the end of the day, he says, make sure that whatever parts are left over, make sure they're all collected and they're all buried, given a proper Jewish burial. The heter is only to dissect the body. It's not considered an evil, it's mutter for a tzarech, whatever the heter is, but the mitzvah of kura still applies. And even though, as we said, you could still be mekayim some aspect of kura with some body parts. The mitzvah of kura certainly lechatchila is to bury all or as much of the body as possible, and therefore you should not just leave the body on shelves and boxes and jars. You should bury all the parts of the body that you can respectfully after you're finished with them.